That's out.
Oh, he dropped it. I don't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball, and the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up.
Hey, great cricket.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. Well, the World Cup is almost here, a mere few days away from match day one. We'll run you through all the warm-up matches and tell you what they mean and how nothing means anything under a Boris Johnson government. Smith scores 100, knocks England out of the World Cup after getting booed like he was David Warner. New Zealand smash India, but Kohli's walking like a dude, feeling all cool. South Africa beat Sri Lanka in a warm-up battle for sixth place. Afghanistan and Pakistan go head-to-head to remind us they exist. Monty Panesar tells us that everyone is cheating always. Izzy Westbury gives us the view from the UK, and Australian wunderkind Will Bukowski joins us fresh off the back of a circuit, and we'll answer all your questions using the hashtag AskTGC. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined, as ever, by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. Boys, good evening to you, and the World Cup is mere days away.
Oh, here goes. I'm blown away by the clinical precision of that introduction. Also blown away by how crisp your voice is on the Telstra ads that are coming through as well. You've got some good voiceover chops.
That only took 4 hours to record a 30-second ad.
And just finally blown away by your 7% body fat and the 40 Instagram followers that you gained after I mentioned that. I saw a piece in the Sydney Morning Herald today that I wanted to pick up with you on air.
Oh, yeah.
The elite private school dating app called Toffee.
Yes.
That was launched in Britain last year. It bills itself as the world's first dating app for people who are privately educated. You're privately educated and reasonably elite. Are you on this app?
I don't want to say that I'm one of the backers for Toffee, but, you know, it's just finally nice to be able to meet someone, excluding all people outside of anywhere that I grew up with. So,
Does that dating app have a radius outside of 800 metres from the Oaks in Neutral Bay? Because I thought that was where you met all of your... potential conquests within that specific 800 metre radius.
And where I live as well, so cheers.
Yeah. Love we've gone from World Cup to like ultimate localism in 2 minutes, 15 seconds.
Well, we straddle the line, we straddle.
Yeah, that's, and we're just giving the people what they want. Lads, before we get into the show, we did tease some huge UK news last week.
This is huge.
Well, it's huge and true now. That can be confirmed. Look, you know, who better to...
Last week it was just huge. This week it's huge and true.
That's true. That's true. So, I mean, who better to make this announcement than our producer and friend of the show, Toby Shane. So here is the big UK announcement.
Thanks champ.
Oh no, you called me champ.
The Great Cricketer is bringing their live show to the UK for the Ashes. Join Pez, Dave and Higos as they explore the A to Z of cricket. From club to country, from champ to chop king. With shows in Birmingham, Leeds, Manchester and London, the Great Cricketer Live promises to tackle cricket's deeper questions, like why do we inflict this game on ourselves? What does work hard really mean? Will a tight chest and enormous pipes push me up a grade? And why is my father's approval so pivotal to my happiness? With special guests in each city, the shows will provide the perfect tonic to England's impending World Cup win and Ashes triumph. Head to thegradecricketerlive.co.uk for details.
Okay, so there it is. Massive news. We are coming to the UK. A world tour. Birmingham on August 4th. That's a Sunday evening. Then Leeds on August 6th. That's Tuesday. Manchester the next night, August 7th. And then we finish off the UK tour with in London on August 13th. That is the night before the Lord's Test match, Tuesday evening there in London. You can get, obviously, all your tickets there at thegreatcricketalive.co.uk. So, bad Lloyds, boys, lads.
Lloyds Bank.
Entourage
for a second.
Yeah, exactly. We're heading over. UK boat tour.
We've worked hard on this for a long time. I mean, I don't even know what any of these venues are. He goes, the Glee Club in Birmingham, the Wardrobe in Leeds, the Dance House in Manchester, and Leicester Square Theatre in London. So the great cricketers on the West End, I guess, is what we're saying. And you know, like we had to do this tour because it sort of felt like there's something apocalyptic about this UK summer brewing. You know, if it, whether it's England's World Cup win, the impending World Cup win, that is, Smith and Warner's return, Anderson's farewell, getting chaired off with Stuart Broad. We felt like we just had to be there. And, you know, obviously we're going to have some guests at each of these shows as well. So, yeah, just wanted some early thoughts from both of you on us in the UK.
Well, I mean, Pez, I think we're ready. I mean, we've honed our craft in Australia over several years, particularly last summer. It's kind of like what the Beatles did in Hamburg in the early 60s. You know, how they reps, and club nights, doing those hard yards. I mean, we did last year, we did Adelaide, it was 40 degrees. Jeez, it was hot. Our audience had rolled over from Adelaide Oval. They had absolute gallons of pig's ears, you know, blind as everyone there. That was a tough gig. We did the Comedy Store in Sydney two nights in a row, the Corner Hotel, probably Melbourne's most iconic music venue. So, geez, I'm hoping we're ready for this. And if we're not, then I expect that we will delete the Twitter account finally.
He goes, we're canvassing sort of Midlands England up into the north of England to kick things off. Will we survive that early foray into the UK, just covering the northern areas?
Will we? Oh, almost definitely not. I mean, there's no danger we're getting to the West End.
We're going north. I thought we were going south.
We're going north.
Also a good time to remind our Australian fan base that we are going to be in Melbourne and Sydney the week before we take off. So that's the 25th and the 31st, Melbourne and Sydney, Corner Hotel, Comedy Store in Sydney. So, yeah, we're just completely selling out in all capacities, but also just want you to buy tickets all over the world. So please do come along. Shall we actually talk about some cricket now?
Hang on, one more shameless thing to say. Here goes. Yep. Firstly, tickets come out, I think, next Friday on the 31st. But two shameless call-outs. First one. You know, anyone got tickets to Lords on day one and two of the year? why not? That's something. Second, if there are any clubs or organisations or, you know, corporates with deep pockets who are just sick to death of hearing the same mafioso of blokes tell the same stories about their exploits on the Test circuit, we're very much available for hire on those days that we don't have shows. Yeah. You can call it shameless or financial justification for coming over at all. But if your group is keen for some entertainment with material sourced after 1975, get in touch with us at gradecricketer@gmail.com. If you need to convince your CFO that we're normal people who can explain why club cricket selection contains more brutality than the arm wrestle for the Conservative leadership, we do have a showreel. And finally, if there are any tickets for Lords day one and two, reach out.
It's for West End as well. I'd love to go and see some shows.
Can anyone hit us up for some free West End tickets as well?
How far we've come. We used to just ask for gloves. Now we're trying to get tickets to matches and West End shows.
Is Hamilton still on? I got some of those £10 tickets, but I was away when I was living in London. I didn't want to leave my dog at the house. If any Hamilton tickets?
Love to see
if
Hamilton.
If Lin-Manuel Miranda's listening. No, but seriously, on the corporates.
Yeah, no, but seriously. All right, well, that's all the time we've got for this week's show. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for tuning in as ever. We couldn't do it without you guys, the fans. Lads, there was a warm-up game that happened that was televised. It was a 22-place, 22-man game, just rotating squads endlessly. Australia versus England. Australia have successfully knocked England out of the World Cup already with a weakened side. So can we take away anything from this match? Australia's 7 for 295, beat England 280-odd all out.
You can always take away things from anything, he goes. I mean, I flicked over probably for the first 20 overs or so. I saw us going at around 4 and over, and I thought, well, it's 1999. We're off to the start, and that's fine because I liked 1999.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're now in 2019 or some shit, and everything moves at a frenetic pace. Social media, 24/7 news cycle, policy on the hop, short-form snackable content across all mediums. You need to have a fast start. And if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. Or at least that's what I thought. But, you know, we beat England with a score under 300, so maybe it's 1999 again.
That's what we want, isn't it? We want it to be
1999.
And that's like that's generally the vibe around Australia at the moment as well. Like talking to a few friends and just reading pieces and watching the TV. Like this country, more than anything else, like views sport through the prism of 1999. So as much as England like head into this World Cup with an unparalleled record of winning over the last 2 years and a very stable side in a situation where Australia doesn't yet know its batting or bowling lineup, people will still say, yeah, but England's a myth. You know, yeah, completely disregard them and overstate Australia's ability. But Australia won. The two things I took away, he goes, and the two things that most people are talking about are, one, Smith's got that fucking frightening look in his eye that says, I've been out of the game for a year, so I must now compensate with interest in the kind of savant-style batting.
Did you note that Smith referred to the boos as white noise? Which is an apt way to describe a Southampton crowd. White blokes making a lot of noise. Imagine being so switched on and just in the moment that you apparently don't hear all the hurtful things said about you. Like when I'm batting, like I hear everything. Like I hear absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes I'd hear the opposition slips call and just having a really good conversation, and I'd be like, fuck, I wish these guys were my teammates. Yeah. But he just blocked it out, and he's got that look in his eye, doesn't he? That look.
Yeah, I can't remember if I said this last week or if it was in one of the four ghost casts that we recorded last month or so. But like, yeah, I was away a couple of weekends ago on a boys' weekend, and one of my mates had a couple too many drinks, and he also had that look in his eye just after a couple of rums, you know. But it's a sort of different sort of look.
Different look, isn't it?
Steve Smith got. I'll tell you what scared me is that Joss Butler hit a 50 off 30 balls and just looked really at ease, and then just chipped one to mid wicket. He's like, "Is it a warm up game? I'll get out of here." Like he's an imperious
don't want to show
batsman.
Him too much.
Exactly. Don't want to show him too much.
Yeah.
I know we rested Stark and Cummins, as we endlessly do, just rest all our best players because the next series is the most important match. I'll tell you what I can't get my head around. I can't get my head around Coulton Isle. I don't know what he is. I don't know what a Coulton Isle is. Like I've never seen him, you know, bowl particularly well, and he bats kind of like nine, and he's not really he threatens with late order runs but never delivers. I think he's probably going to play, and I want to know why.
I think he's just that piece of the puzzle, he goes. He's a puzzle, he's a puzzle piece. He's just a piece of a puzzle, and you need to complete the puzzle, and without him you can't complete the puzzle.
I think a good Coulton Isle is a bit of a poor man's Pat Cummins, and then what elevates him into the national squad is the rig-based selection.
So isn't he one?
That's a good point.
He's extremely good-looking.
That's a good point.
Just stop for a second.
It's conventional good looks as well.
Yeah.
It's quite conventional. Could be any era. Put him in any era of Hollywood films, and I think he would be a leading man.
He is. He's a brawny Australian with, hairy forearms, which we implicitly trust, you know, at a subconscious level.
At all costs.
At all costs sometimes. But when he bowls well, he gets up around, you know, that he's really that Australian tick box cricketer, like of bowling quite quickly, hitting very powerfully, being good looking and being a good bloke. Interesting with the Aussie side is that, like, I think it will be between him and Nathan Lyon for that bowling spot if Australia goes with three quicks. Coulton Isle will be in, and Zampa will be the spinner. And if they go with two spinners, which sort of seems to be in vogue in ODI cricket at the moment, then Coulton Isle will miss out. It'll be Stark, Cummins, Zampa, Lyon, and then a fairly conventional kind of batting order with Kerry at seven.
Yeah, I think that's right, Pez. So just looking at the other squads all over the World Cup, and basically everyone's playing two spinners. And you look at like even New Zealand, they've got Ish Sodhi and Santner, Lyon, Zampa, you know, Adil Rashid, Dawson, overs from Joe Root, Ali, you know, it's these sort of things. Like it's a real strong emphasis on slow bowling. So I don't see many countries. I mean, India, when they played against New Zealand, they played three spinners.
Well, we shouldn't be just following trends for the sake of it, I don't think.
I mean, we're Australia is meat and three veg, you know. It's three quicks at 140 and a spinner who does a job.
Out. And if we don't blast you out, we'll get a bloke on who can turn it a bit. But we will physically get you out before we have to think about it.
Yeah. And then when we start batting, we'll go at 4.5 and over, be 1 for 75 after 15, you know, and launch in the last 10.
Mm. Yep. 1999.
We're going to win the same World Cup as we did 20 years ago. I want to know what you guys made of the booing of Smith and Warner. I mean, we obviously touched on it there, that Smith claimed he didn't even hear it. But was any surprises? Any surprises that was kind of the visceral reaction?
Mate, it's like it's going to be such a tedious talking point for the next 4 months, this stuff.
So and let's talk about it on every podcast.
So let's talk about it. Exactly. Like, it's going to be a talking point where both countries can engage in a pissing contest about behavioural standards, leaving both exposed to the worst thing you can be in the pre-Trump era, hypocrites. But now we're in the Trump era, so we can say what we want, devoid of facts. So we'll say England shouldn't boo and ignore many issues of rampant booing in our own country. Incidentally, there's a good Adam Goods doc about to come out. And on the England side, well, you know, the atrocities of empire don't seem to be a check on their sense of ownership over the rules of civility either. So in short, we both have heaps of fuckwits in our respective countries who will continue to embarrass us and provide magnificent fodder for passive-aggressive journalists and Twitter wars.
Imagine if every, like, national team, like, when they were playing, they just had the... In the back of their mind, just the thoughts of past atrocities committed by their country. It would be really difficult to, like, win games.
I think it would be really helpful. We'd be much better people, you know, to compensate for the atrocities of empire.
I think so. Between every ball and between balls, you should be thinking about atrocities of empire and atrocities of your own country.
I get the feeling like some of these wickets are going to be so flat that, like, you know, Justin Langer's going to start looking for any edge we can get. You know, England's talking about hitting 500 in an innings. Like, it's not going to be long before, you know, we bring up, you know, colonialism.
Yeah, so Justin Langer's going to get on Wikipedia and learn about England history and start bringing some insults in the presses.
Well, overnight, Graham Swan did say, and this I think this kind of sums up the, like, tedious tit-for-tat. It was like, oh, I hate the booing of Smith and Warner. Don't sink to the standards you might expect in Brisbane. Be better. You know, like the dog whistle of, like, greater civility is just rampant, and it absolutely winds me up, which is absolutely what he wants to do, and therefore England win.
It was also good of him to pick up on some of the undertones there of the Australian election, what with Queensland being a pivotal seat and whatnot.
What do you make of it, he goes, though? I mean, I did follow your Twitter feed.
I mean...
The election.
Of course it was the election. Let's go back to that. Let's go back to that. I'm telling you, Shorten lost it when he was running over a bridge with no arm swing. I mean, of course it was going to happen. I just thought it was... I think it's a weird thing to do. Don't you think, like, when you go to watch cricket, there's already enough fuckwits? Like your number one thing when you go to the cricket these days is, like, I hope no one with a fucking sombrero sitting in front of me because I can't see anything. It's $120 a ticket. I'm here for 8 hours. It's $15 for a light beer. You know, like... And then, like, imagine if the person next to you is just booing a bloke who really didn't have much involvement in the thing that didn't affect you in any way.
Anyone that just boos a player... relentlessly it's strange, throughout isn't it? A match is doing? A fucking small-minded individual. Like, you just don't really have a brain that's functional.
And I will include the Australians who booed Stuart Broad. And I, to be fair, I celebrated Stuart Broad.
Those blokes were right.
Mid on and not walked. So Stuart Broad, fair play to him. Nick won a slip. Yeah, stand your ground, mate. He's paid his fees. Fair play to him. But yeah, booing at a professional athlete is a weird thing to do in general. But
same blokes that boo players are the same people that wolf whistle women from construction sites.
But also booing someone who's scored 100 though as well.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, he's brought up 100. Boo.
Yeah.
You absolute monster for being the captain of the side that ball tampered. I'm just aghast at your behaviour still. You shouldn't be here.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a wind-up, and they'll get under their skins because they're humans with mental frailties, and England will win, and this is what we've got to do to win.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the first of four months of conversation with this continue. Exactly.
But it's okay because we behave badly too, so because we do it, they do it, and it's a good Twitter war.
That's a good point, Pez. Well, I mean, speaking of tit for tat, Monty Panesar's come out with his shockingly autobiography, his book, The Full Monty, that England's bowlers use mints to alter the condition of the ball and assist with a reverse swing. He said that he once used the zip of his trousers to rough up the ball and noticed that mints and sunscreen affected the saliva when shining the ball. So this is a thing that we already knew, but the Australian media's obviously taken this moment to pick this up to say that, hey, everyone's cheating and it's always happening.
Yes, conspiratorially, you know, if I was working in comms at CA, I would commence the campaign to like broaden the discourse around who has ball tampered, and like Monty Panesar therefore is a double agent for Cricket Australia. I've read a good book called The Spy and the Traitor. It happens, you know. I don't know if he's defected yet. He did play for Campbelltown for a little bit.
True.
But yeah. And he West. Says I might have also accidentally caught the ball in the zip of my trouser pocket to rough it up a little. But yeah, I mean, unbelievable, isn't it, that other teams have ball tampered? You know,
can't believe it.
Well, let's go.
Shining the ball in the zipper of the trousers as well. I don't remember my whites actually having a zipper.
But this is like the bit that was interesting about this, because ball tampering is not interesting. It's been going on forever. Was when Panesar told Nasser Hussain that he was with former Australian spinner Greg Matthews and friends in London when he struggled to join a conversation and, in inverted commas, connect with reality. And then Greg Matthews suggested to him that he see a hypnotherapist, which he later did. So let's just separate a few things. Firstly, it's good for Monty Panesar to address his mental health issues. That's right. But let's just introduce Greg Matthews into this conversation.
Yes, finally.
Dave, I believe you said this, but you know, when you're taking suggestion or advice on mental health from, well, I'm going to finish that. Let's just say it didn't come on our cast this week. So.
Yeah, he joined the plethora of people who just left our messages as seen. All right, let's move on to India and New Zealand. I said their warm-up game. India were 8 for 100, or 100 for 8, depending on which side of the Atlantic you're sitting on. They ended up making about 170 or something, and then New Zealand absolutely cruised it. I was watching the highlights just before. Ross Taylor batted nicely. Kane Williamson does the job again. But that's not really the big talking point from this game. The big talking point is Virat Kohli's ad.
Looking like a dude, feeling all cool. You've got the look, you're gonna rule. Hey man, you're all set for tonight. Paint the town red, cause Virat says so. But before you step out, dear bro, that pimple's gotta go, gotta go, gotta go.
Bro, style dikhna chahiye, pimple nahi.
Himalaya Men Pimple Clear Neem Face Wash. Ladkon ke liye, neem ke double action ke saath. Ye ziddi pimple ko aasani se nikale.
That pimple's gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. That pimple's gotta go, gotta go, gotta go.
Looking good?
And loving it. Himalaya Men Pimple Clear Neem Face Wash.
Himalaya. Khush raho, khushhal raho.
Any sort of takeaways from this game? It was surprising how much India struggled, particularly against. I feel like the wicket was a bit underprepared. It was a real green deck, and Bolt especially caused some troubles with the Indian top order.
Yeah, I didn't watch one ball of it nor one element of highlight of it, but I did see that Harsha Bogle observed that New Zealand seemed to be enjoying it more. And is it important in cricket to be the team that enjoys it more?
If you enjoy cricket, then you'll win cricket. That's the equation of cricket. And if you don't enjoy cricket, you lose. Yeah. No, of course I fucking don't.
I feel like the enjoyment factor is only applies to some teams. Like, Australians have never been allowed to enjoy it.
You can't enjoy anything in Australia.
But New Zealand...
Not just cricket. You're not allowed to enjoy anything in Australia, lest you be called, you know, a tall poppy. Let's never forget this.
That's true. We used to be able to have nights out, especially in Sydney. Not anymore. Cut those short.
Yeah, that's the same thing.
I feel like New Zealand, when they're enjoying their cricket, they're really you know, playing well. But that's the opposite of Australia. Like, we're enjoying it when the other team aren't.
We're playing our best cricket when we're like riven with like territorial warfare, and we all hate each other. Like the divide between the war and worn. Just that's when we play our best cricket, is when we're just at loggerheads with each other. You know, on a personal level.
Hate is a huge emotional driver for Australian cricket, and has been for quite some time. I have a piece coming out about this actually this week. whereas New Zealand, in keeping with their like reputation, global reputation of being admirable, progressive people under the leadership of Jacinta Ardern, are going to catapult their way through to the semi-finals as the people's team. Let's not forget that they were in the World Cup final in 2015. They knocked Australia over in the round games before. Mitchell Starc left Brendan McCullum's stumps all over the MCG.
Stumpsplosion.
Yeah, it was a stumpsplosion, that's right. But they're a lot of people's pick for a semi-final berth and could go further. You know, Trent Bolt's one of the world's leading ODI bowlers. The conditions are going to be favourable for them as well, given that it's England. And, you know, no one wants to say a bad word about New Zealand just because they're fucking great people and we wish that our country was like theirs a lot of the time.
I wonder if their batting's a little light. Like, that's my only... I mean, they have Gaptel up the top who can be an explosive player. Ross Taylor, for me, is a little bit... He might have two good innings in the tournament, you know, kind of thing. I mean, Kane Williamson's genuinely a world-class player, but he's not the kind of guy who'll take the game away from you in the same way that England have about four guys who can take the game away from you in, like, a power play. I just wonder if their batting is just, for all the will in the world, Bolt's a good bowler, but they probably lack a... You know, a real class spinner as well. You know, Sodhi and Santner, they're decent players. But you know, I can certainly see them finishing fourth. But anything higher than that for me is going to take one of the sort of three shorter price favourites to have a really bad tournament. And
did
I just can't
like
see
the
that.
Way that they did that captain's photo, and the way that Kane Williams was kind of just hovering on the outskirts with a really, really kind of. Corny smile, whereas everyone else was trying to look like a hard motherfucker. Like everyone,
he was
like,
normcore.
He was really normcore. Like everyone else was just trying to exude alphadom, the fragrance to alpha by TGC or whatever it's called, Chopkey by TGC,
or whatever it's called. The thing that we wrote,
can't remember the thing we wrote, but alphadom. That photo is fucking glorious.
Yeah. I saw it was Dan Brittig, friend of the show, on last week's episode, picked it up, and like there was just a lot of parallels could be drawn with like India having their own chair, and there's Kohli with a big fuck off leg spread, just his piece everywhere up in my grill, just leaning, just reclining into a leather lounge. A lot of metaphors there.
Aaron Finch had kind of one leg crossed over the other in like this. Like you could tell that he'd never done that before. Like he's never crossed his legs in that way in his entire life. Like it just looked really unnatural. Like the glutes weren't quite there. It's like, you know, he's never done that. He's never done that.
Do you reckon those captain's days are kind of awkward, where like you would know each other, you'd know everyone really well, but
it's like
no
when you're at
really
a trade show event and you see your competitors there and the bloke that's got the same job title for you for your competitor and you're like, oh hey mate, I don't really want to chat to you, but I guess I should.
I was having the same thought. The captain's days are like when you see people at a trade show event.
Pez, South Africa beat Sri Lanka, who are still a test nation as far as I'm aware at the moment. That would have been nice for South Africa to get redemption after them, Sri Lanka beating them in the test series at home.
Absolutely, yeah, redemption secured in the practice match. Yeah, no one's talking about South Africa seriously, are they? But they're a side that has, you know, Duplessis, De Kock, Rabada, Steyn, fit like... you know, they can knock teams off as well. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, that. Seven teams can do a lot of damage in this World Cup, possibly eight. I don't know. Like we said last week, I think if Australia turned up against South Africa, I wouldn't have, like, a boatload of confidence that we'd knock them off. I think they're on a good side.
Edos, let me put it to you that I think that there's like a few teams that have no interest. They have no right to be in this World Cup. No interest in really playing any games. They're just going to ruin someone else's tournament. I'm thinking like Sri Lanka, West Indies. They're going to Pakistan as well. They're just going to put on it's like an amazing 5-star performance against one of the favourites, and then they'll just ruin the finals chances of someone who can actually win it. You know what I mean?
They're just going to ruin it, aren't they? Yeah. I mean, we talked about the emergence of small parties last week. But, it's like, Clive Palmer coming in and taking a small percentage, but preferences flowing, the wrong direction. They can just fuck up someone else's good time, can't they? There's no other reason for them to be in the competition.
No, exactly. Like what I mean is, let's say Australia's heading into the West Indies game, right? And Chris Gayle hasn't scored any runs. There's just every chance he hits 250, against you, and then doesn't get another run for the rest of the tournament.
But that's like in grade cricket when you're, when your team can't make the finals, but you're in the last round or two, you're coming up against a team that can, or they're on the precipice of maybe not making the finals, and you pour your heart and soul into that performance like you have not done throughout the entire season, because this is your opportunity to spoil someone else's party.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because if you can't win, Pakistan and West Indies, who have actually won the World Cup before, if you can't win, you've just got no right to be there.
The next best thing you can do if you can't win is to fuck someone else's good time.
That's exactly. I mean, it goes back to the point. Hate is a powerful driver. Mm. I mean, this is the overall theme, name of the show, most likely. Okay. Pez, Afghanistan and Pakistan. What happened?
Well, Afghanistan won, and then Australia plays Afghanistan in a couple of days. And Afghanistan have three spinners who are very good. One of which obviously is Rashid Khan. It's Mujib Urrahman and Muhammad Nabi, and they all played in the IPL, and they all spin a web, and sometimes it's mystery, sometimes it's not. And talking about ruining tournaments, I mean, like, Australia has a relatively soft start to the tournament, but if they don't get that right, then they're going to be in a shitload of trouble. So, those who watch these closely know that Afghanistan aren't just there to make up the numbers. I know it's a horrible cliche, but they beat Pakistan, so.
I don't think I can remember a bowler like Rashid Khan. Where I was also watching him during the Big Bash in the last couple of seasons, and just batsmen can legitimately not pick which way the ball is going to spin, it's like it's so awesome. Just like that's real skill. Yeah,
for me, apart from taking a wicket, the ability to humiliate and deceive a batsman, by spinning the ball away contrary to the way they think it is spinning, especially at that level, must just be so orgasmic. You are putting your bat down this plane, and I already know that it's going to go somewhere else. Like, those infinitesimal seconds must just be wonderful for Rashid Khan. You don't know which way it's spinning. You get paid to play.
I can't remember who sent it to us, but I think there was a clip in, maybe it was a New Zealand grade competition, maybe it was last week, maybe it was a few weeks ago, of a leg spinner bowling to a batsman. And he bowled he was bowling what looked like to be a leg break, and it pitched, and the batsman went for a big cover drive. And the bowler obviously knew internally that it was a wrong un, and he did this weird little skip, as the guy went to play the shot, because he knew he was playing down the wrong plane. And at that moment, he was having a mental orgasm.
Yeah. And you can never get that bowling pace. Like, you can't bowl so... No. You can't... Unless you sort of have some matrix ability, you're not going to sort of hit the seam and go, I know which way this is going to seam.
Do you reckon Glenn McGrath had that?
Unless you're James Anderson.
Anyway. Heading into the first match Australia versus Afghanistan, probably one of the biggest selection issues is who bats three for Australia. So I put it to you, lads, who bats 1, 2, 3 for Australia? I presume Smith's batting 4 for you.
Yeah, I think they're going to open with Warner and Finch, and I think that Sean Marsh will beat Usman Khawaja to that spot. One thing that's kind of important to point out, everyone's naming their side for Australia's World Cup side. There are 10 matches. There's no doubt there'll be rotation and experimentation through it, especially if they win the first couple as well. Guys are going to go in and out of form. I think there's, we love his chest, but there's a question mark over Stoinis at the moment.
Big time.
Hasn't made an impact with the bat for quite some time. And yeah. There's a big question mark over how long he takes to start and where you play him. Like, Stoinis at the moment is one of these guys you want to do well and give him every chance to do well. But, you know, like, he'll probably play, but and they will give him that chance. But, yeah, I think they're going to go for Sean Marsh over Khawaja, because as much as Khawaja's average has been fantastic, he's probably just doesn't have as – he's just a little bit more limited than Marsh in terms of his ability to explode.
Well, there's probably a question here about facing spin as well. I mean, there might have been a chance that Smith might bat three against Afghanistan, given that Afghanistan actually sometimes open the bowling with spin. So, you know, you lose a wicket early, then you probably want your best player of spin to face those pivotal overs, especially in the first power play. But I suppose we'll find out when Australia do take on Afghanistan in the first match of the World Cup, which is coming up in just a few days' time. So let's move on with the show. Izzy Westbury coming up. Then after that, we are talking to Will Bukowski.
It's Queensgrove Sports' massive birthday sale. All brands reduced to clear. Kookaburra, Grey Nichols, New Balance, GM and more. Everything's priced to make you think it's actually worth it. Need a new stick to kid yourself that you'll actually average above 11 this season? Don't waste your money on actual therapy. Try retail therapy instead. We've got last year's stock with this year's stickers and double the price. We've got the brands of yesteryear too. Remember MRF? Brian Lara used one. So that must mean you're good enough to use it too. Flintoff and KP used a woodworm. I'm pretty sure they went into receivership, so we're basically giving them away. Remember when Albion sponsored Chris Martin, the worst batsman of all time? I have no idea how these bizarre alien pads didn't sell out. We've got them! What about those weird Indian brands that look like railway sleepers, weigh the same, and have absolutely no middle? We've got you covered. We even sell bats with no stickers on them, so it looks like you're trying to get sponsored, even though you're in fifth grade. So rush into Queensgrove Sports today and make this season your last.
Well, lads, she's a cricket reporter with the UK's Telegraph, not to be confused with Australia's Telegraph. This is a good paper. A BBC sport broadcaster, and not incongruously at all, an enforcement lawyer with the Financial Conduct Authority. I'm talking about Izzy Westbury. Izzy, welcome to the show. First question, did the findings from Australia's Royal Commission go far enough, and can you paint a picture of the regulatory mess that is Brexit?
I honestly didn't think you were going to go there. There's obviously a huge crossover between ethics in finance and banking and cricket, as we've seen, and I think the bottom line, if we're talking about lines, is we've got to do better, fellas.
There's like millions on a royal show. Fish, but lads, just do better.
Okay, Izzy, we're in various places around Australia doing this conversation. What's the vibe like in England ahead of the tournament starting? I know there's a lot of conjecture over whether enough people will see it because it's not on free-to-air, et cetera, but do you get the sense that there is some kind of atmosphere building for the World Cup in the UK?
I think there is. I think that we know that we are in the best side in the world, and therefore we also know that we're therefore going to get knocked out in the semis. That is the overarching vibe. I mean, you only have to look at our kit launch, for example. I mean, what do I say? The kit is beautiful. But where's the inspiration from? 1992. What did we do in 1992? We came runners up. I just don't think anybody knows or can even comprehend winning. No one's ever experienced it. And so we're just in unknown territory. And I mean, it's not even a sense of daring to dream. We just don't know what it's like. It's like men going to Mars. We just don't know.
Well, how does it compare to, say, the expectations ahead of the Football World Cup last summer? Because there was obviously huge expectations there. Again, let down. But is it kind of on par with that? I mean, I know it's not as mainstream a sport, but there is hype. Are people willing to believe?
Well, this is the sort of hilarious thing. Actually, England, the men's team, I think they got in Gareth Southgate to come and consult them, but he kind of rocked up and didn't know what to say because he was like, well, we went into the World Cup and no one thought we'd do anything, and then we did do something. But you guys, everyone thinks we're going to do something. So basically, yeah, don't fuck it up.
Professional stuff.
Izzy, I want to ask, obviously, there's a few injury scares from yesterday's warm-up game against Australia. You know, Mark Woodward went off the field, Joffre Archer, I think Dawson copped one on the thumb. Any sort of injury scares that the Australians can hang on to that's going to decimate this England squad? And is Paul Collingwood the new Gary Pratt?
Actually, I've got a story about that, Paul Collingwood. So, as you know, that if you get invited into the establishment of, say, the cricket world, that the key thing isn't about your byline or your email. It's about whether you get into the WhatsApp group, right? So I got invited into the written media WhatsApp group. So I basically made it. And it's the England media chat, sort of, he'll tell us about team sheets and news and a few embargo things. It's all very serious. But now and again, there's a bit of banter. And yesterday, I was a different match. I was an India match, which, well, that's a whole other matter. And he wrote on the WhatsApp group that Collingwood is stripped. And now I read that and went, Paul Collingwood has stripped. So I wrote back. I read it as Collingwood has stripped with those little googly eyes, expecting a whole load of banter to ensue. Absolute silence. Like, they just, nothing came out of it. And I'm just worried, chap. I've been shunned. I don't know what to do.
Just 10 blokes.
This is
a question.
This is an ask. Yeah. This is an ask TGC question. What do I do in this WhatsApp group with absolutely silent after what I thought was the line of the century?
Because now, though, you can you can get the info on the message and see who has seen it. You know what I mean? So that's the first thing I'd be doing. But if you got two double blue ticks, that means every single person has eyeballed that message and responded with nothing, which is extremely troubling. And I understand your situation. I'm a bit rattled by it myself.
Well, the next notification needs to be Izzy Westbury has left the group.
But also, Izzy, you've gone against all protocol of WhatsApp groups in revealing what was said by someone in the group. Yeah. So you should leave the group and WhatsApp in general.
So basically what you're saying is that my career is over before it's even started. This is a sad day.
Oh, you had a good run.
I had a good run. It lasted a couple of days. England, I mean, the approach to our injuries in Australia, I think it's basically we're taking the approach that when you're playing a lesser nation, like your Netherlands or Namibia's, or maybe even your Zimbabwe's these days, and of course, you're Australian, then you need to rest up on the big fellas. When we need them, really. So that's all it is.
Speaking of Australia, Izzy, there was, as we described earlier, the tedious interplay began with Warner and Smith entering the field in Hampshire and receiving rapturous boos from the crowd, and then that cued the moral grandstanders in Australia saying, oh, that's not really right, we wouldn't do that here, and that is a straight lie. What's the feeling in England about Smith and Warner, if any, and how do England plan on using crowd boos to teach colonial inferiors about behavioural standards?
Well, I mean, obviously there's a sense of inevitability. There's obvious avenues. I mean, the Barmy Army, apparently they've made, nine songs now or something along the lines. It's going to be the chance. It's going to be the sandpaper. I don't know, the forward sixes signs in sandpaper writing. That's going to happen. We know that. What's more interesting, actually, is that the establishments have started getting on the act too. It's sort of like state-sponsored sledging. So BBC, it's the state broadcaster. They wrote a song, and actually they played it as well. I have to send it to you, to the tune of Don McLean's American Pie. They've written a song called The Australian Lie, and it's absolutely beautiful. I don't know if you have seen it, but lyrics such as singing, this will be the itch in Cam's thigh, this will be the itch in Cam's fly. This is amazing.
Oh my god.
Took sound, no one writes a parody song. Jump up one side.
No one is better at writing a parody song than a bunch of unemployed blokes.
Oh, of course, you know. And of course, the only time this ever comes up is when England's doing badly. So I think this song came out, I think, when we were getting trounced by West Indies in the test, that we had to come up with something to kind of make things better. But then, you know, not even only the BBC, but if you look at the other traditional cricketing establishments, like Wisden, like MCC. Now, Jeff Lemon is a wonderful writer, and his book, Steve Smith Men, which obviously is all about the sandpaper, it won both those awards. Now, I'm not saying, not because Jeff Lemon wouldn't have won it anyway, but, I mean, we're literally endorsing the sandpaper gate is something we want to get on the act on, and so it's going to be down in history forevermore, and Wisden and the MCC Book of the Year was the sandpaper book by Jeff. So... That's the interesting stuff. We've got the stuff that we already know, the barmy, army, whatever, but it's the seeping in of the establishments that just saying, yeah, we want to have this as well. One other thing as well, I think Steve Smith, this, with Australian, sort of the bad boys of Australian cricket, I think David Boone, Shane Warne, we like Australians who are a bit, shit blokes, we like that. What we really, really like is when you've got someone who is the idol, I mean, he went like Australian of the Year or something, and then he fucks up, and then he tries to get back in. Is that a good bloke again? That's what we really hate. I mean, Warner, we can love to hate him. It's a bit like Mitchell Johnson, we embraced him, like Shane Warne as well, we kind of love to hate him. We can love to hate Warner, but we actually really, really hate Steve Smith.
Mm-hmm. It's because you need your Australians to be like 1980s stereotypes, like not clever or smart or anything. You just need them to be like characters off Neighbours. When the characters off Neighbours, we understand them, and it's like, dance, Aussie, be that guy. You know, we understand that. Which is good,
just as we need to fulfil the stereotype of, you know, Monty Python in the 18th century, you need to fulfil your stereotype too. I mean, play the role, guys.
Yeah. Everyone be the thing you always were. Never change.
Oh, that's nice. Izzy, thank you for giving us a preview and an insight into the state of play in the UK ahead of the World Cup. We'd love to catch up with you as the tournament goes on, if you, like Dan last week, ever want to speak to us ever again.
It would be a pleasure, fellas.
Kat actually wrote a three-part fan fiction series a few years ago entitled The Choke, which looked at the fallout from the dressing room altercation between yourself and Michael Clarke. Now, clearly this incident split the team into two lines, you know, much like Christos Tsiolkos' novel The Slap. Can I send that to you for feedback? Because I think you'll like it.
I think you've just got good feedback, haven't you?
Fan fiction.
Boys, a few years ago in 2016, as you two know, the three of us were nervously occupying seats at the MCG press box. We were frauds in a sea of professional journalists, and later we discovered that imposter syndrome is common among many journalists. When that happened, a polite, well-spoken young man with large forearms approached us asking for a photo, as he and his family were, in his words, big fans. Righto, champ, we reflexively responded before learning that we were talking to Will Pukowski, literally the future of Australian cricket. Fast forward a few years, there's hundreds, double hundreds, awards and selections galore. It's been a few twists and turns along the way. I texted him last night to ask if he was A, circuiting, and B, keen to cut on the show, and he answered yes to both. So with that in mind, welcome to the grade cricketer, Will Pukowski.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate the little intro.
You've changed in 3 years. That was an aggressive tone.
Yeah. I mean, well, we don't need to ask about club cricket because you obviously don't deal with that trash anymore. No. So I'll keep asking, how was last night's circuit?
Yeah, it was pretty standard. Just down to the SP in Melbourne, which is the hot spot at the moment. Can't really find anything else, so yeah, it was good.
Okay, the SP is the hot spot. That's a sort of had a renaissance. And last time we caught up, Will, you mentioned that you were doing an arts degree and you sort of done first year. It was a bit of a bludge. I went through the old interview. Mm. Presumably you're knuckling down now on gender studies and sociology with Durkheim and Weber, etc.
Yep.
I reckon after that conversation, I cancelled my app to me about 2 hours later, and I haven't been back to uni since. So that's a bit unfortunate. But no, I did go back for a bit. I tried to do a business degree for about 6 months, but struggled my way through that. And then, yeah, I guess I'm in a little renaissance from uni for a bit, but we'll see how we go.
I suppose you're in that period away from uni because you've literally just been scoring heaps of hundreds. Like, talk us through the summer you've just had. You've been brought into the international fold. It's been centuries. You're the Bradman Young Cricketer of the Year. You won the Shield with Victoria. How do you reflect on the summer?
It was a big summer, obviously. A few sort of highs, a few lows, but obviously awesome to win the Shield with Victoria. As obviously saying that at 21 is pretty special to do. It was a big summer, but obviously looking forward to a few things coming ahead as well, so should be good.
Will, so, like, let's be honest, what do you have to do to get on a plane to the Ashes? Like, aside from hijacking the plane itself or marrying one of Justin Langer's daughters, and you're probably too young to be settling down, let's be honest. Well, what do you need to do to get picked in that squad between now and then?
It's a good question. We've got the A tour, so a few runs on that would be handy, I think. That'll be a good start. And then, I don't really know, other than that, sort of a bit of a luck of the draw thing. Obviously, with Smith and Warner coming back, there's two batting spots that are taken up.
A bit annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, it's sort of just, we can't win them all, but that's right. probably good for Australia, at least.
That's the wrong answer.
Yeah. Good for Australia, if not me.
Just the A's are all... hold a fair bit of weight, I would think. So I've got 5 1-days and a few 4 days off for that as well. So there we go over there.
Mate, obviously you were brought in for the Sri Lanka series at the end of the summer there, and then sort of went with Curtis Patterson, who was obviously just in the real midst of a run-scoring spree himself at that point, so you sort of missed out on your test debut on what otherwise might have been. But have you had conversations with sort of Justin Langer, you know, around that time or even since then?
I have chats to him, not necessarily about selection, more just general things.
Election.
It's one of those things where, so it's just been more general stuff and sort of catching up on how I'm going, how the Shield, or back into the Shield season is going. But I know you probably don't want me to say this, but it's pretty hard not to pick a bloke who's just made 200 in the warm-up game against the 10 playing against.
It is quite logical thinking, mate. Will, like, just in terms of the Ashes, there are still batting spots up for grabs, and Cricket Australia has essentially selected like every batsman who could possibly be in contention for both like an A tour 1 day series and then a 4 day series, and you're in both of those sides. I mean, are you just fully focused on doing everything possible to be part of that Ashes squad? I mean, where's your head at with it?
To be honest, not really. I'm sort of, obviously, I've been for a bit over the last year or two, and it's probably more, I'm trying to sort of leave selection on the back burner a bit. I think it's one of those things that can stress you out quite a bit, regardless of what level you're playing at. So probably, honestly, more about just going over there and just sort of trying to win and enjoy it, because I think that's sort of how you get sort of cricket anyway. Again, that's probably a bit too sensible for this podcast, but it's just one of those things where you sort of enjoy them. At the end of the day, I'm 21, so if you get picked, it's amazing. If you don't, there's plenty going on in Melbourne to occupy me for a couple of months before the thing itself.
Will, you're obviously a glutton for runs. This season just passed. You hit 242 in one innings. I'm just curious as to your thoughts on celebrating each 50-run increment post-hitting the century. Like, how do you celebrate a 150 versus, like, a 200? Is the 200 celebrated with more gusto than the 100? Or did you study archive footage of Bradman celebrating his various milestones? Can you kind of run us through the celebration?
Might just be my perception, but like for each 50, it's less carry on than each 100. So even though 150 is more than 100, you carry on less just because that's sort of the principle.
Business as usual.
I don't know what the goal is, but I'm sort of, if you watch stuff. I think they usually go that way. I don't know. I'll have to look at it more closely.
It's just like, for me, it's... Yeah, but it's like if you hit 100 and you celebrate wildly, you should celebrate even more wildly when you hit 150 because it's 50 more runs than the 100.
Logically, that would make sense. But I think it's sort of like everyone wants to make 100 before they go out.
I think it's
right.
Yeah, I think it's probably because when you score 100, someone inevitably yells out "start again." So then the 150 is actually only 50. That's probably what it is.
All the halfway there.
Yeah. Like, I get it. Like 150 isn't a multiple of 100 though, which has this kind of arbitrary like iconicism in cricket. So like 150 doesn't go isn't divisible. You know, by 100 in a.
And why does everyone subscribe to the 100 being the thing? Like, if Chinese play cricket, like, I mean, I know that the number 8 is of importance to the Chinese. Like, what if they scored 88 and just a huge celebration?
Yeah.
Well, in the one day game, that might be worthwhile. Sorry, Will, he asked you a question, then I answer it. Let's move. This is getting silly, so let's move into the throwdowns section. I think we may have already begun it, but you've got quite a lively social media presence. I just like to refer people to my guests' social media presences, but so follow Will. But you share views on matters as varied as AFL, EPL, The Bachelor, Married at First Sight, and just general observations about your friends. So I just want to refer you to a tweet you posted the other day, May 21. My friend George Fry had the chance to hang out with his mates tonight. Instead, he decided to take a girl out for dinner who has a boyfriend and followed that up by taking another girl out for ice cream who also has a boyfriend. Poor form, George. So I just – are you able to provide a bit of background to that story, and do you appreciate that your words specifically have significant reach across the globe?
I don't have enough followers to have that much.
But a bemused Indians gave us some feedback about that one.
I just think the general premise is like you can hang out with a girlfriend over your mates occasionally, that's okay, but to do it with a girl who has a boyfriend that is just stupid, that you're not getting anything out of that, and you have the opportunity to hang out with your mates. I'm not saying you can't be friends with girls, but like if the boys are catching up, that should take priority.
But just like as a follow-up there, like in your group of friends, do they then go, oh, God, like Will Pekowski's Twitter shamed me. Like this is Will Pekowski. Like is that how you teach lessons to your friends whose behaviour you don't like? You just Twitter shame them.
Well, I've sort of had a couple of tips with George recently on Instagram as well because what he does is he tries to do it really sneakily, which implies it's more. If he's just open and honest about it and say this is what I'm doing, then like we'll probably – give it to you a bit, but at the end of the day, at least they told us. But he does it in a way where he tries to get away with it. So he'll flick off his Find My Friends, he'll flick off his Snap Maps and try to get away with it. But then if he gets caught out, that's when it's sort of extra, exciting for us. Yeah. And it's sort of one of those things where it's that dishonesty which makes it a bit harder to, cop as a friend. But it makes sure that. I think I got 200 likes on the tweet in the end, so obviously.
I think I got about 200.
Yeah.
And six.
Obviously, you're a man of convictions.
Yeah.
Strong convictions.
Yeah, I just wanted to get the message out there.
And now it's out there further. Will, another one from me. I understand you've circuited with the Australian squad. Can you give us some insight into what a test standard circuit looks like in terms of like who chooses the venue, who are the alphas, who doesn't pay for a round, et cetera? And please obviously be aware that your answers are on public record, so don't hold back.
I think no one pays for a round.
Is the taxpayer paying for the round, are we?
I think so, yeah. Well, I think whoever the owner of the bar or the bar is the one paying for the round most of the time. It's very, funny enough, it's very similar structurally to a club circuit where sort of you look at it as like a first 11 to fourth 11 sort of set up, but the more games you've played, the more presence and sort of power you've got in terms of where we go and whatnot. Probably the main difference is the extra sort of hanger-oner is I notice, but quite significant when a few of the big boys rolled in, but
I guess
attention when you've had a few drinks isn't the worst thing in the world.
So I assume that you're on a circuit, so you're not wearing team kit, are you? There's no team polos or anything.
No,
No. So what's like? What's Justin like? What's Justin Langer wearing? Like 3-quarter pants and a polo? Like, what's everyone wearing?
Corduroys.
Yeah, well, I've only been on one circuit, and JL didn't join us, so I can't comment on that. But the kit actually stays pretty standard. There might be a few extra garments, like a few Rolexes or something you wouldn't see normally.
IPL money.
One of the perks, I guess. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was a good experience. Yeah, it's probably just one of those things where you felt like a new kid at a club again, where you sort of just blow everyone and have to end the start again.
Absolutely.
Will, you were the worthy recipient of the Bradman Young Cricketer Award back in February. Given that it's generally accepted that professional athletes have become exponentially better than those in the generations before, how satisfying is it to know that you're probably a better player than Bradman ever was?
Yeah, pretty satisfying, I guess.
Pekowski rates himself better than Bradman.
Fox Sports is already writing. I can hear the typewriter.
We got it. Yeah. We got it.
Jacob, don't write it. He's joking.
I don't really know how to answer that, to be honest.
No, you already have. It's already up online.
Yeah, no, it's really good. It's going to be better than Bradman.
I'm a bit overly toxic and tell yourself to Bradman at this stage, but
Yeah.
I like that you put the modifier maybe a bit over the top. Anyway, no, listen, this is unfair. Okay, so Will, stories emerged upon your selection in the Australian squad recently that such was the kind of hype around what a good player you were as a junior, and you must have been quite good, that Ricky Ponting was secretly flown to watch you play and to observe whether you were any good or not. And I guess my question to you is, did you know he was there when you were 11 years old, or was he like one of those dads that doesn't want to put pressure on his son and therefore hides behind a tree? just peeking out the side.
Well, I didn't know he was there, so he did a good job of hiding if he was suddenly flying to watch one of my under-12 games. I don't have any recollection of that happening, but I guess it's a good story.
So was he really there? I mean, it's kind of like when my dad said that he used to come to my games, but I never actually saw him there.
Well, maybe your dad and Mickey are similar, I don't know. But I had a hit with him when I was maybe 10 or 11 in the Nets. So I don't know if that might be the actual story, and it might have been married up to what you've just come up with there over the years. But yeah, I don't recall him ever actually being at a game I was playing and him.
Right. Or hiding behind a tree.
Would he have still been playing though? Yeah, he would have, definitely.
Yeah, I don't know, mate. Pretty Ponting never came to my game.
Yeah, out of the Australian captain's schedule, we do that, but yeah.
So I just blacked out on the start. So Ponting flew to watch you, or was he driven? Was he flown?
I don't know, you're the ones with the story.
Pez, the story that you read.
Yeah, no, he was flying private jet.
Private jet, okay. Cool.
Yeah,
on Drake's plane.
Whose private jet? What was it?
It was Drake's plane.
I think it was his own.
Didn't offset his carbon emissions either.
Early IPL money.
Early IPL money.
I think, I've just got one more here, Will. So just in the same way that a former test cricketer and hair replacement advocate has now 4 times rejected invitations to appear on this show, at what point during this year's Ashes series will your star have risen sufficiently enough to warrant you ignoring communication from us? Or is our colourful veteran offered grateful for the opportunity, but no, in capital letters?
You're probably lucky I was 3 or 4 deep last night when you were talking about it. I try to stay pretty loyal, and I remember how starstruck I was in the box that day, as you said in the intro, so that hasn't changed. So I guess you're probably in luck in that regard. I get starstruck easily.
Yeah, mate, there's zero doubt that you won't remember us in 24 months. Will Bukowski, thanks very much for coming on the show. You are very loyal to do so.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.
Look, to be honest, I don't try and take the piss too much, but the problem is you start to get a little bit bored, so... I try and do the right thing by the competition, I must admit. Wow. When I go there, I try and play conventionally, but realistically, I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park. But you don't want to come out of it and people say, look at that arsehole Hodgie, you know, so... Yeah, what a prick. But, yeah, I mean, it's good fun.
Hashtag Ask TGC. Welcome back, where we get the chance to answer your ridiculous, long, lengthy, exuberant questions each week. And this one comes in from @RealStuartKemp. He said, this is mostly for you, Pez. This is a cricket question wrapped up in an identity crisis. I have attended 8 Ashes tests in the UK across 3 tours, only ever tasting abject defeat. Having now lived in London for 5 years as an Australian, I have been rendered scarred and broken. These scars, however, are not induced by the consistent losing, but by my very brothers and sisters living abroad. With the approach of the World Cup and, more importantly, the Ashes, I have bore witness to some of the most nauseating displays of Australianness that I have lost my nationalistic cricket-loving identity. Observing these pathetic, self-serving sycophants over here has rendered me embarrassed to support my own nation. These people usually identified playing Aussie rules or heard screaming their accents out in the pub in a weak attempt to heighten their own inadequate and incorrect perception of their uniqueness. In the most vile of occasions, they are a part of some sort of fanatics club, often seen with green and gold face paint, having just had a fresh injection of finances from the bank of mum and dad, as unsurprisingly again, they failed to budget despite their great job pouring pints. What am I to do? I feel it to be as inevitable as our top order failing against the swinging Red Duke that this upcoming summer of cricketing bliss will be spoiled by my own people, who are often distinguished by the use of the phrase, get around me. I cannot, however, fathom anyone any more English cricketing success. Please help. From Stu. That, I don't know why that one's just for Pez.
Maybe it's just like from living over in the UK for a little bit. But
I lived
this
there
question
years.
Of like, yeah, how do you...
Three of us have done.
How do you, like, feel and be a proud Australian when so many Australians in the UK, especially those who say, get around me and identify playing Aussie rules and play Aussie rules down in the south of London a lot when you're living in the UK, are so ubiquitous everywhere? It's a question that I don't really know the answer to, but, you know, you can. The people exist. You know, there are good Aussies out there. Haven't found them yet. But they're good.
Well, it's not just England that Australians go to. I mean, this is a global phenomenon. Australians are everywhere. They're in the US. They're in, you know, the deepest reserves of, you know, Latin America, you know, kicking Aussie rules balls around and shouting, get around me, in a pub and, or in places, you know, of deep religious belief, you know, like in places where they really, really shouldn't be doing this. I don't know what the answer is here other than to stop granting visas to people who are shit cunts.
You mean other countries granting them to Australians?
Yes.
Yes. He goes.
I like the way I don't know. I like the way Stu wrote that. But like, there is nothing worse than when people go. They move away from home to go and find sex of home in another country. And like, I mean, London specifically is just a, you know, it's probably the third largest city of Australians outside Sydney and Melbourne, if I had to guess. I don't know. Get around them. Mm. Get around them, Stu.
Just get it. Yeah, if you can't beat them, join them, I reckon. Yep. Face paint.
Yep, face paint.
We're going to lose.
Yeah.
Or are we?
Yeah. Good point.
There's no point there.
Well, last one, because it's been a long cast, from Hugh Patterson. Hi, chaps. He says, was hoping you might be able to offer some advice on a rather troubling matter involving body shaming. I'm currently in the process of toilet training my young son. Mm. Apparently, a big part of this is him watching me relieve myself so he knows what the toilet is for and how to use it. Okay. Mm. Unfortunately, every morning is a horror show. My son stands next to me as I'm passing water, looks at my member, then looks at me and laughs uncontrollably. This happens every morning, and I've never felt so self-conscious in my life. Obviously, I need to toilet train my son, but I don't know if I can take the body shaming. Any advice would be appreciated.
Cricket's ruined his life. Ruined Hugh's life. He can never be exposed in any sort of manner, let alone by his son, who wouldn't know what he's a toddler, a mere toddler. I mean, Dave, you are a father. You are one of two fathers in this trio. Discuss.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm getting to that point. I mean, my son is, 16 months now, but I can't have him stand next to the toilet because he actually really is interested in the toilet and probably would want to put his hands into the toilet and generally my stream as a consequence of that, which I also believe is the thing that happens. So I don't put him on the ground. I hold him, but he does arch his head over to watch the entire thing. So you go to the toilet, you urinate. My son is watching the entire experience. He hasn't actually shown any kind of, reaction to it yet. But maybe it's just the perspective he's, watching it from.
Yeah, like my son just grabs my leg, and just tugs on my leg, while I'm trying to do a wee, and I find that quite frustrating. But, I mean, I suppose in answer to the question, rather than just describing what our various children do when we go to the toilet, but, Hugh, I would focus on toilet training your son rather than overlaying club cricket social phenomena to your young son just wanting to learn how to use the bathroom, and thinking that your body has been shamed by just a toddler who just wants his father to teach him how to use the bathroom. Like Hugo said, club cricket's really, really done a number on you, and I'd urge you just to wake up a little bit, let that go, and be a father to your son and teach him how to use the toilet.
Well, as you said towards the end of it, obviously I need to toilet train my son. Yeah, you do. And please just do that. And just accept that, your deep-seated anxieties that stem from, potentially being humiliated in the cricket change rooms should, be swept aside in favour of just educating your son around just general social customs that he must simply learn how to do. Otherwise, he won't be able to fit into society.
I'd like to change my answer and tell Hugh that maybe he'd like to think about, splitting up his gym routine. Maybe focus on lats and shoulders, maybe. Chest and back's obviously a famous regime. Arms in the same day, shoulders twice a week. Really get that V taper. Is that what he wants to say?
That's what I always want you to say.
Quick cricket.
Did you just press a button? Because I feel like I've heard that exact comment from you before. Like a pre-recorded Hugo's response.
Yeah. Before we came on the show and you said, how are you? And I just said that exact thing. All right. Well, thanks as ever for tuning in and listening to this show. We've got another one coming out this week. And then when the World Cup starts proper, three shows per week all through the World Cup. Thank you very much to Izzy Westbury over in the UK and Will Pekowski in a hotel room in Brisbane after a circuit. Ian Higgins here signing off with Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. We'll see you later in the week.